When you go into the hospital for an operation, did you know that your surgeon might be operating on another patient in a different operating room at the same time? It's an open secret in hospitals that some surgeons are involved in more than one procedure at once, but patients rarely hear about it. Welcome to the ProPublica podcast. My name is Marshall Allen, and I cover healthcare here at ProPublica. Today, we're talking about the controversial topic of overlapping surgeries, or concurrent surgeries, which were the focus of a recent investigation in the Boston Globe called Clash in the Name of Care. We're joined by two of the reporters who investigated the story, Jen Abelson and Liz Kowalczyk. Jen and Liz, welcome to the ProPublica podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Great, thank you.
So, no surgeon can be in two places at the same time. So I'm wondering if you can please define what we mean when we're talking about overlapping surgeries or concurrent surgeries.
Sure. There's a wide range on how this practice plays out in operating rooms, but typically what is happening in some of the cases that we looked at is that a surgeon will have two surgeries scheduled in two different operating rooms that are overlapping for some period of time, and they will be either moving back and forth between the operating rooms, or they will be doing one portion of a patient's care, and the beginning of the next case will overlap with the end of the other case.
And how much time overlapping are we talking about here?
It can vary widely. We have seen that there's small overlaps, which could be minutes to half hour, hour. Some of the cases that we looked in depth at, though, had overlaps of 7 hours and sometimes more. Of case overlap, when particularly we're looking at some spine cases.
Wow, is this a common occurrence?
I think it's hard to know precisely how common or not common it is. We had obtained hundreds of emails that raised concerns about this practice as it played out in the orthopedics department at Mass General Hospital, and there were concerns that it was happening routinely with shoulder surgeries, with spine surgeries, and sometimes in trauma as well. And there were a variety of different kinds of concerns that were identified largely by some of the anesthesiologists who were working in the rooms themselves.
And just to add to what Jen is saying, I think, you know, another element of it is that in order for the surgeons to do this, they're dependent on the residents and fellows are part of the picture. So one thing that allows a surgeon to go back and forth or do overlapping surgery is that a resident or fellow will usually be helping them by doing opening or closing, which raises a whole other set of issues around supervision of trainees and how much they should be allowed to do.
So what's the argument in favor of concurrent surgeries?
I think the number one reason that's given by hospitals is around efficiency and access to care, so that there's no wasted time in the operating room. It cuts down. Sometimes these, particularly in orthopedics, you can have a long time it takes to turn around rooms. There's a huge amount of setup, and sometimes the cases can take a while to position patients. So it not only allows, you know, more cases in one day, but the hospital also says some of these star surgeons who might have long wait lists, it can get greater access to them because they're doing more surgeries, and so the wait time might be less for them to get relief.
And just to add to that, one of the other hospitals that does overlapping spine surgery, Boston Medical Center, they say that the advantage for them is that these surgeons were previously operating late into the night and did not have the specialized staff or our staff available to them, you know, at 8, 9 at night. And by overlapping the surgeries, they can get done, you know, at 4 or 5. And the hospital also argues that that eliminates some of the fatigue factor for the surgeons.
One of the most interesting parts of your story is just the other side of it, that not every surgeon is a believer in this practice. Can you talk about this Dr. Dennis Burke, who you spoke to, who is not a fan of the practice? What was his perspective?
I think Dr. Burke had two major concerns why he spoke out. One is that there were concerns and complaints raised to him by anesthesiologists over issues of what they considered were patient safety and concerns around whether patients were getting the best medical care possible. And then the separate issue of just patient consent, that this practice was known by, you know, the doctors and the nurses and the anesthesiologists and the billing clerks and everyone else, but the only one who didn't know about it was the patient. And in his view and some of the critics' views, that they felt that this was an essential piece of information that patients should have.
I think also another reason why most surgeons don't do overlapping surgery is that they feel it would be stressful for them. I've spoken to a few surgeons, you know, including spine surgeons, who just would find it too much stress in their day, too much work in their day, too much to keep track of for them personally.
Did any of them question the safety of others doing it?
Well, I think there is a variety of opinions about that. Some question that and some don't. There is a sense the safety of it might depend in part on the kind of help you have, the quality of help that you have, the skills of the fellow or resident involved. So I think there is a wide range of opinion, you know, on the safety of it. And I mean, there's one study out of the University of Virginia on this, and they found it safe for, I think, about 45 minutes of overlap. But there are so many opinions, in part because there's so little data.
Yeah, I think that some of the other surgeons in the department, including Dr. Burke, I mean, there are some who do view this as this is not in the best interest of the patient, that their patient is not benefiting by having a doctor having to worry about more than one operating room at the same time. And I think that we had all these emails that were documenting concerns at the time, and there were allegations about issues where there was a complication in one room and the surgeon got tied up there, and so another patient was lying under anesthesia for an extended period of time. And so they felt that that wasn't in the best interest of the patient. Or there was an incident where an anesthesiologist tried to page a surgeon three times to come into the room and had to go looking for him because a resident needed help. And so, you know, those are the kinds of allegations that the anesthesiologists are saying that they saw, you know, and complained about. And I think that Liz is right in that there's no real way to assess at this point, is this an unsafe or safe practice, because there's so little research, and that University of Virginia study hasn't even been published at this point.
Right. Very interesting. So, Jen, how did you all get tipped off about this story?
It was, I think, a combination of we had received tips about this, and Liz had as well, and the issue kind of spilled out in public during an employment discrimination case last year, where the issue of a concurrent surgery and this resident who had been asking for help and the anesthesiologist had to hunt down to three different rooms to try to find the doctor, that came out during court testimony, and that sort of brought it into the light, and we were able to get some more information and start drawing on that. And I will say that, you know, MGH was not very interested in talking about it at that time, I think. Liz may know more, but I think that they also had made some motions in court to keep that information out of the trial. But it was a long process for us to try to get to where we are today. I think one of the things is that the whole industry is reluctant to talk about it. It's not just MGH. And so we've had a hard time placing where MGH's practice, how their practice and their policy compares to other hospitals. MGH has said it's among one of the best, and they have a letter from the American College of Surgeons. However, we've approached, you know, a number of hospitals and tried to figure out their policies and practices, and most have not been willing to share with us or speak in detail about it. So it's very difficult to place exactly where MGH and its story falls in the national perspective.
Yeah, I was very interested in that. Your story says you contacted the Johns Hopkins Hospital, Stanford University Medical Center, and Mayo Clinic, and they all refused to provide you with their policies about concurrent surgeries and also didn't want to discuss the topic with you. What do you think is the source of that reticence?
You know, I mean, just to add a little more detail to that, I found most of the Boston hospitals were willing to discuss the topic, and we did, even though nobody agreed to share their policy except MGH, most of the Boston hospitals did talk about their policy, how this practice worked at their facilities, at least as much as they're willing to say. But you're right, on a national level, we had no real luck getting policies. And, you know, it was kind of interesting because at a bunch of these places, we had names of doctors who do overlapping surgery at like Stanford or Mayo. And, you know, we contacted even those doctors individually, and, you know, the hospital would sort of kind of get in the middle and say, you know, the doctors are not going to talk about this. I don't know. I think that maybe there's a realization that patients do not understand this in detail, and that there's a fear that they're going to be upset about it or really question it or be reluctant to have surgery under these circumstances as they do find out. But there is a real reluctance, I think, on the part of these very large institutions to discuss this issue.
What do you think patients have a right to know about this? I mean, should they be told?
You know, I think they should. I think a patient should have the right to ask about and be told anything that's material to their surgery, including their physician's volume, how much they do, what their complication rate is, and which parts of the surgery they'll be doing, which they won't be doing, and, you know, if they'll have another room. I mean, I think for all these things, it's very difficult for patients to get information, and I think we haven't reached the point yet where surgeons are comfortable talking about even their complication rates, you know, let alone whether they run two rooms or not.
And when we talked to patient safety advocates, they said that, you know, what's key for patients is to be able to know anything that's material to their surgery, and that includes things that who's going to be involved and if the surgeon is going to be in the room the whole time, and if he's not, if he has another patient going in another operation room. And so they have said that those are the kinds of things as part of the informed consent process that the patient should be aware of and should have entitled to that information so they can make a decision about whether or not this surgery and they can fully understand the risks and the benefits there.
Yeah, is this something you would recommend that patients ask their surgeon about before they have an operation?
I think if I personally were going to go have surgery, I would ask. So would I.
Yeah, and up until now, they haven't really known to ask.
Yes, I mean, I think they should ask. And I think it kind of goes beyond, you know, whether the surgeon's running two rooms. That's the first question. But I think it's also important to ask about exactly what the surgeon expects he or she will do and what the surgeon will delegate to others. Because even if they're not running two rooms, you want to know, even if they're going to be in their office, what exactly it is that they delegate to another person.
Right. I think the strength of the story is that you revealed something that has been maybe an open secret within some hospitals and in some operating rooms, but that patients would have never even thought to ask. So thank you for that excellent story. I think it's a good time to wrap up our podcast here. Thank you, Jen and Liz, for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Marshall.
Thank you for listening to the ProPublica podcast. Stay tuned next week.